In the 1960s, when the civil rights movement still relied on the classically liberal formulation of judging people by the content of their character, enlightened liberals denounced the one-drop rule, which said that if you had a single drop of black blood, you were black, a standard transparently similar to National Socialist notions of who counted as a Jew. Now, according to the left, if you have one drop of black blood, you should be counted as black for the purposes of positive discrimination. So valuable are the privileges associated with blackness that some black intellectuals want to make racial fraud a crime. It's a strange racism problem when people are clamoring to join the ranks of the oppressed and lobbying for laws to make sure oppressors don't get to pass themselves off as victims. The glorification of racial permanence has caused the left to abandon narrow rationales for affirmative action in favor of the doctrine of multiculturalism. The diversity argument, which, by the way, is only used to defend favored groups. Asians and Jews almost never count toward the goal of diversity, is an argument for the permanence of race and identity. In other words, if the left has its way, racial preferences will no longer have anything to do with redressing past wrongs, except when such preferences are under attack. Rather, the pursuit of diversity will become the permanent license for social engineering bean counters to discriminate against whatever group they see fit in order to reach the desired balance. For example, quotas unfairly kept Jews out of universities to help white Protestants. Now, quotas unfairly keep Jews and Asians out of universities to help blacks and Hispanics. What's different is that now liberals are sure such policies are a sign of racial progress. Diversity depends on and therefore ratifies racial essentialism. Not only do rich and increasingly foreign-born blacks count as much as poor ones, but the argument now is that mere exposure to blacks is uplifting in and of itself. The policy is condescending and counterproductive because it assumes that blacks come to school not as Tom Smith or Joe Jones, but as an interchangeable black prospective student. Professors turn to black students for the black point of view, and students who don't present the party line are counted as inauthentic by condescending white liberals, that is, most faculty and administrators, or by race-gaming blacks. I've been to dozens of campuses, and everywhere the story is the same. Blacks eat, party, and live with other blacks. This self-segregation increasingly manifests itself in campus politics. Blacks become a student body within a student body, a microcosm of the nation within a nation. Ironically, the best way for a white kid to benefit from exposure to a black kid, and vice versa, would be for there to be fewer black students, or at least no black dorms. That way, blacks would be forced to integrate with the majority culture. But of course, integration is now derided as a racist doctrine. You might say it's outrageous to compare the current liberal program to help minorities with the poisonous ideology of fascism and Nazism. And I would agree if we were talking about things like the Holocaust or even Kristallnacht. But at the philosophical level, we're talking about categorical ways of thinking. To forgive something by saying it's a black thing is philosophically no different from saying it's an Aryan thing. The moral context matters a great deal, but the excuse is identical. Similarly, rejecting the Enlightenment for good reasons is still a rejection of the Enlightenment. And any instrumental or pragmatic gains you get from rejecting the Enlightenment still amount to taking a sledgehammer to the soapbox you're standing on.